recorded and clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Berger Beyer. Beyer Bonamici. Bonamici Boone. Boone Boquist. Boquist Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Burley Butler. Butler Cameron. Cameron Cannon. Clem. Clem Cowan. Cowan Dallum. Dallum Dingfelder. Dingfelder Chris Edwards. Chris Edwards David Edwards. David Edwards Esquivel. Esquivel Flores. Flores Galizio. Gerard. Gerard Gelser. Gelser Gilliam. Gilliam Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Greenlick Hannah. Hannah Holvey. Hunt. Hunt Jensen. Jensen Comp. Comp Kotek. Kotek Krieger. Krieger Crummel. Crummel Lim. McPherson. McPherson Maurer. Minnis. Minnis Morgan. Morgan Nathanson. Nathanson Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Olson Reed. Reed Richardson. Riley. Riley Roblin. Roblin Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum Schaffler. Schaffler Scott. Scott Shields. Greg Smith. Greg Smith Patty Smith. Patty Smith Thatcher. Thatcher Tomei. Tomei Wisnet. Wisnet Witt. Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Berger. Beyer. Boone. Burley. Butler. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Flores. Gerard. Gelser. Gilliam. Greenlick. Hannah. Hunt. Jensen. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. McPherson. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Olson. Reed. Riley. Roblin. Schaffler. Scott. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Excused. Cannon. Galizio. Richardson. Maurer. Excuse for business, Roblin.
We're going to go with the first motion and just complete it, and then do the next two to roll tomorrow.
Colleagues, we'll go ahead and resume. When we recessed, we were under third reading of House bills. There had been a motion to move House Bill 5019A to Tuesday, June 12th. That motion is debatable as to the time. And is there any further debate on that motion? Seeing none, those who are of the opinion that the House should move House Bill 5019A to Tuesday, June 12th, and that is a special order of business, will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The chair is in doubt. I'm going to ask us to open the election system, and so we'll try it again. Those who are of the opinion that we should move House Bill 5019A to be a special order of business on June 12, 2007, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes no. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Boquist votes aye. Representative Scott, how do you vote? Scott votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Flores votes aye. The motion to make House Bill 5019A a special order of business on Tuesday, June 12, 2007, has a required majority and is adopted. House will stand at ease for a moment. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you to approve to sign the following bills, House Bills 2184 and 2626.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 179, 328, 624, House Bill 3339. Passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2397, 2487, 3183. Concurred in House amendments and repassed Senate Bills 58, 193, 239, 271, 303, 379, 504, 605, 590, 671, 704. Senate Bill 244. Senate refused to concur in House amendments.
The Senate did a lot of work. Representative Scott, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Based upon information I just received, I request consent or unanimous consent for a Republican caucus.
For what period of time, Representative?
Specific, Mr. Speaker?
A specific time, please. In minutes. Not days.
And also for clarification, Mr. Speaker, it is my understanding that if we come back earlier than what I request, we will not be able to do anything until that time has expired.
That is confirmed by the parliamentarian, yes.
Okay. Half hour.
Representative Scott asks for unanimous consent to have a recess for 30 minutes for purposes of the Republican caucus. Representative Hunt.
Democrats are still here, still ready to do the people's business. We'll stay on the floor.
As the Representative Scott has asked for unanimous consent, is there an objection? Hearing none, we are in recess for 30 minutes.
Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Flores Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gelzer Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Minnis Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Tomei Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Berger, Fire, Dallum, Dingfelder, Flores, Gelzer, Shields, Tomei, Excused, Cannon, Galizio, McPherson, Maurer, Richardson.
We are under third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
5020. House Bill 5020, relating to financial administration of the Department of Education, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 5020A. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that House Bill 5020 be made a special order of business at the top of the agenda tomorrow morning, Friday, June 8th.
Representative Nolan moves that House Bill 5020A be made a special order of business tomorrow, Friday, the 8th, at the top of the agenda. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a motion. Oh, I'm sure it was unanimous.
We're backing up because
we're being early in the queue. Did I request unanimous consent, Mr. Speaker?
And I did not hear his objection. So,
okay.
But I'm taking, did you rise for purposes of, to make an objection, Representative Brody?
No. Oh, me?
Well, I'd like to ask a question first, Mr. Speaker.
You rise to a point of order?
No. I'd like to question.
She didn't make the motion. She made the motion.
In what sense?
She didn't make suspend the rules.
So what do we want to do?
Then appropriate motion the way it is. Now, we want to recognize this so she can ask for unanimous consent. Then we have to object to the unanimous consent. If we want to discuss it, I'd like to discuss it. And the way she made the motion, I was punching in, and you said so what?
We have a motion before us. It is appropriate to have the maker of the motion speak to the motion only in, as it pertains to the timing, and then it is debatable according to the time. And it's Representative Burley, I understand you're in the queue to ask a question of the carrier of the motion.
May I?
Yes.
Thank you.
So we'll give the maker of the motion the opportunity to speak to the motion if she desires. Hold a minute.
We'll let her change and make the motion proper. She didn't make the motion proper. We have questions with Carrie. She said she thinks. Okay.
Representative Nolan, do you wish to speak to your motion?
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker. I'll call your attention to the fact that attached to your third reading alert today are school formula revenue summaries pertinent to this bill and the next bill, which I encourage you to review and consider before you vote on this bill. And also I'd like to point out that this bill and the next bill are probably the most significant bills we will vote on in this session, and both the body and the public has a right to know when we will be debating those and when we will be considering them, and putting them in as a special order of business tomorrow gives that proper notice.
Further discussion of the motion, Representative Burley.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does Carrie yield?
Gladly.
Thank
she
you.
She does.
We just a while ago moved House Bill 5019, the Department of Education's budget, to Tuesday, June 12th. My question is why, with House Bill 5020, which I agree with you is one of probably two of the most significant budget bills we're going to vote on this session, are we moving or not moving that as well to next Tuesday, June 12th? Date certain.
Thank you for the question. I have suggested tomorrow because even one additional day of certainty for school districts helps them make decisions that they're obligated by law to make before the end of this month.
To the motion?
To the motion.
Aside from the fact that we probably should have done this then weeks ago, the problem I have with tomorrow is that I'm going to be excused for family medical purposes, and I know for a fact that another one of my caucus members is out for a family medical emergency tomorrow, and I would like very much to be able to vote on this bill. My wife has been a teacher for 13 years. She's an assistant principal now. I am a very big supporter of public schools, and I am very much upset about the fact that I will not be able to vote on this bill or presumably 5021 tomorrow.
Further discussion of the motion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the motion maker, please.
Question of the maker of the motion. Do you yield?
She does. Thank you, Representative. Is the primary reason for moving the bill because the carrier is gone today?
That is one reason, but it is not the only reason. I think since this bill was scheduled to be debated this morning, when the public expected us to debate it and those interested in listening to that debate were available to listen, I want to give them enough notice so that they can be here to hear the discussion tomorrow morning.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker?
To the motion.
To the motion. Colleagues, we've made clear to the leadership that this education bill is terribly important. We have heard from the co-chair the significance of the education bill. You've heard from the representative from Central Oregon the passionate plea to be available to participate in the discussion and having the opportunity to vote. We also have three other members to which you've been notified that they will not be able to be here for that vote if you move these to Friday. We've already moved an education bill to Tuesday on date certain. That process would allow us to move the two bills that we're looking at to that same date certain timeline. It would accomplish those things that the representative co-chair has mentioned, that they are significant, that it does provide proper notification, and that it would allow the bulk of the representatives available that are known to be in attendance the availability to be here. If this was so critical, time-sensitive critical, we would have passed this very bill on the 81st day. The fact is we did not do that. Moving this to Tuesday with the rest of the education is the right thing to do. It allows all those who would like to participate to do so. It gives the public absolute time certain date to be prepared to listen, watch, or be here to participate. It gives the media all of that same opportunity, and it's simply the right thing to do to move forward. But to push this for tomorrow and not have available a number of folks just simply isn't the right way to handle it. I'd urge you to reconsider this, and let's put these things together on Tuesday. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Hunt.
To the motion?
To the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We were ready to vote on this at 10 this morning, and at 11, and at 12, and at 1, and at 2. The carrier of the motion, the representative from Tigard, had to leave the building at 2, which was well known by the Republican leadership from this morning, which is why I assume we are here where we are now. This, unlike the previous bill, this bill, school districts are actually counting on. Representative Maurer actually made an excellent point this morning. The school districts are waiting on us to tell them how much they have to spend this school year. They're not waiting on the Department of Education budget. I think the average school district could probably, I may be overstating this, but could probably care less about the Department of Education budget. They care a lot about 5020 and 5021.
Just a moment. Please continue, but please be careful to stay within the scope of the motion, which is a debate solely of the time rather than the substance of the bill.
Absolutely. School districts are counting on us to pass this bill and the next so they can know how much to allocate for schools. It's critical that we pass this. We were ready to do it this morning. We would have loved to do it this afternoon if the carrier of the bill were here. We'd like to do it as soon as he gets back tomorrow. There are Democrats who are going to be missing tomorrow as well as Republicans. The schedule's been posted for Friday for a long time. Moving it till the first best time when the carrier of the bill is available would be very consistent with what we've done on a whole series of other motions this session. I urge us to approve this motion.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, the first two sessions I was here, we didn't do this budget until August, and the school district survived. We could do it today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday. I know the school districts are very full of anticipation and want to figure out how much money they have. I appreciate that. You know what? Nobody really cares when we do this budget, except for us. We all look like a bunch of idiots here bickering back and forth. Let's just carry it over, move on.
Representative Dallum.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure that I will be as eloquent as my colleague from Happy Valley. That's a tough act to follow, but I do want to say some things. The issue here today has nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with schools. To lay that argument is foolhardy. This issue has to do with when we want to consider this legislation. School districts set their budget meetings, and those dates are firm in the newspaper. School districts adjust that budget when this money becomes available. And in the final budget meeting, this figure does have some certainty, but as my colleague from Happy Valley said, when you get the number in August, you work with the number in August. So to say school districts are always waiting, but the numbers are in the bill. They know what we're going to pass. These numbers have already been put through a budget process. I do want to plead with you. My colleague sitting next to me is at home in a very, very difficult family situation. Could we wait until Tuesday for him? Thank you.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
Colleagues, I'm going to agree with my colleagues, especially the representative from House District 59. Is that right? Yeah. The school and my colleague from Happy Valley. Yeah, the schools deal with it when the budget is approved in August or June or February or whatever. It all becomes a lot of political theater. The comment was made that on the bill that was considered earlier for movement to Tuesday, that school districts don't really care about that, and I would submit that that is not true because there is money in that budget that will also flow to school districts. But taking up all three education bills at the same time really does make a lot of sense. Between the Department of Education and the State School Fund and the School Improvement Fund, we are looking at the largest piece of the general fund budget that we will consider this session. So why not put them all three together when both caucuses will have the opportunity to have all of their members here to be able to participate and debate and vote however it is that they feel that they want to vote on this bill. Instead of cutting somebody out now, tomorrow, let's go ahead and give the proper notice and make it an official, a special order of business right behind 5019 on Tuesday, and we can make Tuesday morning the education day. It should have been here about 2 months ago, but that's okay. And do all three of the bills at the same time. And I would suggest then that the next bill that's up also be set aside to Tuesday as a special order of business right behind the first two that we're dealing with right now. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Hunt, you are allowed to speak a second time since no one is in the queue.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent for that we recess for 15 minutes for purposes of a caucus.
Representative Hunt asks for unanimous consent to recess for purposes of a Democratic caucus for 15 minutes. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will stay on the floor and be prepared to do the people's business.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess for 15 minutes. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Beyer Bonamici. Boone. Boone Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Esquivel Flores. Flores Galizio. Garrard. Garrard Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gilman Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Thatcher Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Beyer, Boone, Esquivel, Garrard, Gilman, Thatcher, excused, Cannon, Galizio, McPherson, Maurer, Richardson.
When we recessed, we were under third reading of House bills. There is a motion before us. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I've listened to some of the concerns raised by friends and colleagues of mine and ours on this floor. And in the spirit of collegiality, Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and I be allowed to withdraw my motion.
Representative Nolan asks unanimous consent to withdraw her motion. Is there an objection? Hearing none, the motion is withdrawn. The chair requests unanimous consent to carry over House Bill 5020 and 5021 and to make them a special order of business on the morning of Tuesday, June 12th, and they would be at the top of the order, top of the special order, just before 5019. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I realize, colleagues, that this is out of order to the degree of where we are on the agenda, but I would like to, on behalf of our caucus, express appreciation for the consideration that that you have made and what is going to move these bills. Our caucus does appreciate that. Our members that are not, for whatever reason, able to be here tomorrow appreciates that. And we want to assure you that we do understand why and that we want to thank you for the consideration that you make.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2595 relating to government ethics and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2595A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's been a very long day, So just to top it off, I thought I'd bring you a very, very complicated bill on a very important issue. This is the How I Spent My Interim bill. This is actually a consolidation of a number of bills that were proposed by the Oregon Law Commission. Some of you may not know what the Oregon Law Commission is or what it does, so let me start there. This commission was created in 1997 by the Legislative Assembly and is housed next door at Willamette University. Its mission is to conduct a continuous program of law reform. They use a variety of methods to meet this mission, in some cases simplifying, modernizing, and consolidating statutory provisions. They can also propose new substantive and procedural provisions to improve Oregon law. In other words, colleagues, if you don't realize that the Oregon Law Commission is an incredibly good resource for this body. Last session, after there were many discussions around the GSPC, Government Standards and Practices Commission, otherwise known as the Ethics Commission, ethics and reporting issues were discussed last session, and the legislature asked the Oregon Law Commission to convene a working group to review and clarify this complex set of statutes. This overall effort was led by Attorney General Hardy Myers and included a spectrum of interested parties from cities and counties, lobbyists, two legislators, myself and Senator Johnson, and volunteer citizens. In addition, an even larger group of folks served as advisory members to help us understand the complexities of dealing with these issues. Colleagues, listen up. Here is the central message that you need to understand around our ethics statutes. We in the legislature, aided and abetted by an interested press corps, think that the ethics statutes are all about us. But the fact is, these statutes apply equally to all levels of government, both paid and volunteer, across the entire state of Oregon. This means that the same ethics laws which concern us also apply to every volunteer firefighter in Harney County. And it means that we had better be very careful that the rules, regulations are clear, understandable, and evenly enforced to all of the roughly 200,000 Oregonians for whom these statutes are applied. So, after hours of reading, arguing, meeting in work groups, and trying to understand all the diverse points of view, the Oregon Law Commission came forward with a package of 10 bills. As a package, this is a comprehensive cleanup, clarification, and reform of our laws around the whole responsibilities of the GSPC and those who fall under its jurisdiction. Colleagues, at this point in the session, even the freshmen understand that in terms of legislative process, an up or down vote on 10 related and well-organized bills is simply too direct a route for us to take and to maintain our reputation for doing things the hard way. So what we have now is Senate Bill 10, which contains many of the more controversial issues that the Law Commission worked with, and which I understand is in Ways and Means. And you have this bill, House Bill 2595, which combines provisions from many of the Law Commission bills into a single omnibus of those issues around the workings of the GSPC, which are considered to be less controversial in nature. Permission to use a visual aid?
Representative Berger asks unanimous consent to be permitted to use visual aid. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have provided a floor letter for you. It is a very, very good outline of this bill. It was done by the staff of the Law Commission, and I offer it for two reasons. First reason is to help you understand the provisions of this bill and give you a guide to the sections, what they cover, so if you look at the bill and this guide, you can go directly to the actual written law. It will guide you, and it will help me if you have specific questions about the bill. The other reason I put this sheet on your desk is to illustrate how thoroughly and completely the staff of the Law Commission discharges even the simplest requests from a legislature. These folks are really good colleagues. We owe them a huge debt of gratitude for the work they do. As I indicated, the Rules Committee was in general agreement that the changes proposed in this bill are not particularly controversial. They streamline the process, clarify the roles and responsibilities, and bring provisions up to date. But there are two specific provisions which I would like to make you aware of. First, there are changes in term of penalties. In this bill, the maximum single violation penalty was raised from $1,000 to $5,000. But we also, in this bill, give the GSPC the authority to write rules around classes of violations, so repeated actions may not repeat the fine. An example of this is the old cell phone issue. In a controversial case many years ago, the GSPC had to fine for every cell call made from a phone because each call was considered a separate violation under the law. This bill gives the GSPC the ability to write rules for classes of violations. Another major policy decision was made by the House Rules Committee in this bill. This issue is the root of appeal for an official who has been found in violation of the GSPC. In the past, an official had a choice of an adjudicated process through our administrative law proceedings and then on to the Court of Appeals, or an immediate opt-out to the Marion County Circuit Court. This opt-out was a unique feature of our ethics law, and there was much discussion in the work group around this issue. I don't want to bore you with the details here, so let me summarize. The Law Commission work group decided that public officials should not have an appeal process that is any different from other professionals like nurses and cosmetologists who are found in violation of professional conduct. These professionals take their appeals through the administrative law judge process and do not have this immediate opt-out provision. When this proposal went from the work group to the full law commission, it was changed again, and an even different split hybrid system and ALJ and county court was proposed. The Rules Committee heard testimony that the hybrid system made an already complicated system even worse, so your Rules Committee went back to the original proposal of the work group of the Law Commission and basically agreed that public officials will have a process which mirrors what other professional groups in Oregon must follow when appealing rulings from the GSPC. If you are not lost and confused yet, you probably should be. I will quit while I'm ahead. Try to answer any questions you have and hope that I can do so. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Carry yield the questions.
Question of the carried. Is the carried yield?
I do.
She does.
Okay. I'm deeply concerned the Section 18 maximum penalty up to $5,000. And have the committee discussed on the severity of this up to $5,000?
Mr. Speaker, could he repeat his question? I didn't.
Oh.
I couldn't
yes,
exactly.
Yes, please restate your question.
Okay. My question is, this up to a $5,000 penalty, have you discussed that in your committee, especially for the legislators?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. There was not a great discussion in the committee, but in the Law Commission work group, there was huge discussion about this. And what's different in these provisions from previous was, while the penalty goes up significantly, what we have allowed here is the Law Commission to be able to write rules that says there is some lesser penalty according to a lesser violation, which in the past they have not had that authority. If it was a single violation, it was the full bore, you paid everything. So what the Law Commission suggested and is in this bill is that the GSPC be able to give lesser penalties, and they would have to write rules around what that would be. Does that answer your question?
Yes. And another question?
Additional question. Carrie, do you yield?
I do.
She does.
Okay, this is a simple question. Maybe everyone knows. Do you know how much legislators are paid in a month? How much are we get paid in a month? 1 month salary.
clarification, Mr.
Clarification.
No, can I ask a clarification?
Please, go ahead.
Do you mean during the session or during the
talking about the salary, monthly salary.
If during session or during...
It doesn't matter, either the session or after the session.
I presume...
Not per diem.
Additional clarification. I think the... answer both parts if
you want. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, good representative, I believe it's about $1,500 a month, not per diem.
That's correct. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker and the members, as I read this bill, I like the bill. It's a good bill, and I'm willing to support it. My concern is legislators, monthly salary is about a little more than $1,500 at this time. After tax, I'm getting about $900-some. Okay? I'm sure many of you. If someone got caught by mistake, if he's fined up to $5,000, which is $5,000 the maximum, then the legislator has to pay 5 months salary, or 6 months. And this is obscene. You know, I checked some other state legislators, even Washington State, you know, they are getting $42,000 a year beginning September. Other states getting $40,000. California getting about $100,000. Our state is the bottom of the nation. And then requiring by simple mistake up to $5,000, this is not right. And I'm willing to support it, but I just want to bring attention to you that this is something we need to consider. So with that, I'm going to close my remarks. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to Carrier.
Question to the Carrier. Does Carrier yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I do.
Carrier does yield.
You would think with all the time I could have got to these questions, but I didn't think to do that. The first question I have involves the executive director. Is there anything in this legislation that prevents him from running for office?
Not aware of it. Thank you. There is nothing in this legislation about that. This is not something that was discussed either in the Committee of the Rules or in the Committee of the Oregon Law Commission, at least the work groups that I was aware of. There may be provisions like that, but they are not in this particular legislation, and so that's about as good an answer as I can give you.
Further question of the Carrier?
Additional question, do you yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
The second question involves the executive director as well. Who has the authority to fire the executive director?
I think it's the governor, isn't it? Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the question, and now I'm thinking I'm getting where you're going with this. That is not in this bill either. I believe that it, and I am speaking from memory and without expertise, that it is the governor, but it may be the board of GSPC, and I'll bet you know the answer to that.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
I think this is a good bill, and I chaired Rules in 93, and there is a problem that I wanted to see addressed, and maybe we could address it maybe next session or something, and that is who has the authority to fire the executive director. And I'd like to see it be the commission, because obviously if the governor is being investigated, then the commission should have the authority to fire the director, and there are times that we need to fire the director. And I'd also like to see that it would also be that he would be banned from running for public office. The executive director ran for public office in my district.
Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Thank you. One brief question to the Carrier.
Okay. A brief question to the Carrier. Does Carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Former member of this legislative assembly, Representative Jeff Krupp, was severely reprimanded for, as a volunteer firefighter, when he took his wife to a dinner which was honoring the firefighters in the area where he was serving. They may have given them a plaque, I don't know. And the GSPC came down on him with both feet. Is there anything in this bill or anything in your discussions that would indicate that maybe we'll bring a little bit of common sense back into that kind of activity where Representative Krupp was always so anxious that he could never take his wife to a fireman's appreciation dinner again?
Thank you for that question, Representative. I tried to emphasize in here, thank you for this question, because it does speak to the fact that the most bizarre and banal thing can suddenly fall for a volunteer under the GSPC. The important provision here, and this also speaks to a previous question, is that now the GSPC has a vehicle for writing rules that it may be a violation, but it's of such a minor nature that they don't have to sock some big violation. They can write rules around something that is far more reasonable and brings sanity to this, instead of having to throw the book at somebody who has just inadvertently stepped into something they didn't even know was an issue.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does yield.
Good representative, you provided this document. It's called the Oregon Law Commission Staff one-page summary of House Bill 2595.
I did.
All right. In the first paragraph, I'm very offended. I'll be voting no on this bill. Says the GSPC relies primarily on the media. Let me read that again. The Government Standards and Practices Commission relies primarily on the media and public to bring ethics complaints. Is that indeed a part of this bill?
Good representative, this is a background statement by the Law Commission. This is not a part of the bill. The highlights below are a part of the bill. And what they are referring to in this is that the GSP does not go out and look for complaints. The GSPC has plenty to do with the complaints they get, and I think that's what they're referring to here, that media and the public making complaints is the way things basically come to them. They do not have the authority to go out and look for ethics violations, nor do they have the time or the staff, I might add.
Follow-up, Mr. Speaker.
Follow-up question to you.
I do.
Good representative, are you aware that if the media submitted some type of an ethics complaint against one of the fine members in this legislature, another member of the media inquired about the disposition of that complaint, that the response they would get is that there could be potential criminal action?
Mr. Speaker, good representative, no, that none of that is in this bill, and I'm actually trying to keep to the substance of the bill, but I am not aware of that, and none of that was discussed by the work group.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm greatly concerned that we have a situation where when a public official is accused of any type of possible violation, or as this statement here from the Law Commission says, the media might have some reason to believe that you have done something that is not appropriate or proper or legal or honest, that you have absolutely no way to control the response from the public agency, whether it's the Secretary of State's office, elections, or any other agency. The response is always, anytime a complaint is lodged, that you are suspect to a criminal activity. In my opinion, that's called being found guilty prior to guilty until proven innocent, instead of innocent until proved guilty. I think there is a serious flaw in the activity of this group and the oversight, and I think that immediately needs to be corrected so that our very most important judicial legal position should always be that an individual is indeed innocent until proven guilty, and no public agency has the right to say otherwise until that issue is resolved. Serious, serious problem with this bill regarding that.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to respond anew that and sort of reiterate that this is tough stuff, heavy weather, and I think that the last good representative hit the heart of it. Until you've had a violation or an accusation of a violation, you don't understand how awful and personal this is. I think that the representative mentioning the firefighter or your local county volunteer in some capacity who suddenly in the paper crops up something about an ethics violation, all of a sudden you care very deeply about the workings of the GSPC. And so this is a very important bill and a very important effort to give them the tools they need to investigate these complaints in a timely and adequate way and get to resolution, because there's a lot of very personal stuff at stake whenever this comes up. And it isn't just us, although we are the most high profile, it applies throughout the state. So this is, I repeat, a very important bill. And if you, after we complete this work, if you have further questions about it and want even more details, I'd be willing to meet with any of you and have help from the Law Commission. To the good representative from, I think it's the Sania District, no. Anyway, my friend from Staten. I would call his attention to page 10, section 16, line 32. The Oregon Government Standards, this is existing law, this is not a change. The Oregon Government Standards and Practice Commission shall appoint an executive director to serve at the pleasure of the commission. That is existing law. Some quick person found that. To answer the question. This is not the last word, colleagues. There's always more work to be done. There's more work to be done around not just the GSPC, but the campaign finance pieces. I hope that you will all continue to pay attention and be aware and engaged, because this is important stuff. I would urge your vote for this. This is a huge improvement over existing law in with regard to the processes and the way the GSPC does its work. If the GSPC gets some better funding, they, I believe, will be working a lot harder on public education and getting things done in a timely manner. And there, a lot of these issues, I hope, will not even crop up because people understand what their ethics statute obligations are, and we can go forward without with as few people being caught in this net innocently as possible. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrard, how do you vote? Garrard votes aye. Representative Nelson votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Olson? Representative Olson. Representative Olson is off the floor. Representative Olson is excused. House Bill 2595A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill. Representative Crummell, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request to return to courtesies.
To courtesies, Representative?
Yes, courtesies.
President Crummell asks unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you. Colleagues, yesterday I introduced you again to one of my interns that was here for the session and is leaving. Today I want to introduce another one of my interns who has been here actually since about December of 2005. Cameron Davis is sitting at my desk right now, and this is his last day here at the Capitol as an official intern for my office. And although he's more than welcome to come back and visit and volunteer anytime he wants to, Cameron does have some other things that he wants to do. He, as I mentioned, started interning during the Christmas break of 2005 and stayed with us during the interim in 2006 and has been a huge help during the 2007 session. Cameron and his parents are longtime residents in Wilsonville. He's a bright young man with a very promising future. He's finishing up his junior year at Oregon State University, go Beavs, majoring in political science. Apparently, he hasn't had enough of all this political stuff at the Capitol, because after he graduates next year, Cameron is thinking about going on to law school. But he hasn't lost a sense of humor, and believe me, when it comes to being in my office, you need a sense of humor. He has been an invaluable asset to my office, and he will be missed, and we wish him the best of luck. And so when you see him, congratulate him on graduating from the 2007 legislative session. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3126 relating to financial affairs and municipal corporations and declaring an emergency state.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3126A. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3126 was brought to you with a unanimous due pass recommendation from your House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. It sounds kind of complicated, so I'll just boil it down. Does it make sense that a small district would have to pay $3,800 to audit how it spent $3,100? That is the question the requester of this bill, the McMinnville Rural Fire District, has asked to do for some time now. And under current law, they receive tax money to provide fire service. They pay nearly all of that to the city of McMinnville to provide the fire protection. There is about $7,000 left over, of which they must allocate $3,800 to an audit, which leaves them with, of course, do the math, only $3,100 to spend. So the amount they had discretion over was less than the cost of the audit itself. Normally, we would value added disclosure, but in reality, there is no added accountability because the money that is passed on to the city is also audited. So the money to do this second audit is simply a waste of taxpayer money. And to my good CPA representative colleague from Southeastern Oregon, we will be taking some work away from you on this one. To try to help these districts be better stewards of the money they receive from taxpayers, this bill will raise the threshold that triggers an audit. Currently, it is set at $150,000 for monies received and monies spent combined. Under the bill, it will go to the first $150,000 for just expenditures. That will be the threshold, just for expenditures, $150,000, in case I wasn't clear. In the case of the McMinnville Rural Fire Protection District, this will make them subject to a review, which is less expensive than an audit. Others will be knocked down to other districts around the state will be knocked down to the level of just filing a statement in lieu of an audit, where they simply disclose where they spent their money. I would also say that the $150,000 amount in the bill has not been updated since the 70s. In current dollars, that $150,000 would be approximately equivalent to $480 some odd thousand dollars. We didn't increase the thresholds to the current dollar amounts. Instead, we compromised by just eliminating money received from the equation, which in effect doubles the threshold. The bill reflects a consensus reached between the Secretary of State Audit Division and the bill's requester, and from work done over two sessions. Your aye vote is a vote for good stewardship of taxpayer money, and I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I don't have a to the bill.
To the bill.
I don't have a conflict here. I think it's good law. I know that there are some accountants that might be concerned, but I don't do audits, never have done audits, and I think those that do audits are really nice people because my wife is an auditor.
Thank you, Representative. We will note you do not have a conflict on this bill. And further discussion? Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Representative Greenlick, votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 3126A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3201, relating to taxation.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3201A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 3201 comes to you with the unanimous support of the House Revenue Committee, all the members that were there the day we considered it, and includes three ways we can support the work of military personnel, their families, during and after their service. In 1971, this body chose to reward military service by allowing service members to subtract $3,000 of active pay for their service in Oregon. If we were to adjust that amount just by inflation, it would approach $15,000 today. House Bill 3201 doesn't go all that far, but by doubling the amount to $6,000, we can give much-needed financial assistance to Oregon men and women serving in the military. The bill also extends the $6,000 subtraction to employees of the Oregon Military Department who work for the Oregon Youth Challenge Program. Many of you know about the innovative approach that program takes and the difference it makes for at-risk youth and the impact it has on our state. It's an important part of the military department's mission and deserves our support. Finally, the bill aims to ensure access to treatment for veterans by extending a tax credit to physicians who treat patients at the Oregon Veterans Home. The credit would be $1,000 for each 8 patients treated, or $5,000, whichever is less, and ensures some accountability by requiring that the physician submit proof that they missed no more than 5% of their scheduled appointments. These modest measures obviously do not match the contributions made by military members to our state, but in economic terms or in terms of sacrifice, but they're a good start, they're a good investment, and a needed recognition, and I urge your support. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I would like to thank the Veterans Committee for their work on the physician's incentive and ask for your support on House Bill 3201. The Veterans Home, located in the Dalles, has, as the SMS says, 10 part-time physicians. But the real problem is getting a physician, getting them to stay. And this incentive is tightly targeted. I don't think we'll read about physicians in other places taking advantage of the incentive, but it would give our veterans, and when you visit there, a constant, sane physician that they could rely on that would grow to know them. I am very pleased to have been part of this, and I thank the Veterans Committee. They spent a lot of time working out the formula, and I would urge your support of House Bill 3201.
Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 3201A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3437, related to exotic animals.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3437B. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. 3437B comes from Elections, Ethics, and Rules, and was in agricultural before that. It simply adds crocodiles to the existing exotic animal list in the state of Oregon, and it creates an exemption for Bengal and Serial cats under the existing law. Good bill should pass.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rise in strong support of this bill. First of all, I want to thank the Humane Society for the hard work and the long work that they've done. This is a multi-year process. Colleagues, we all love pets, and pets are a great thing, but any pet that can maul you, dismember you, impale you, probably aren't good pets for Oregon or Oregon families. I want my pet to be able to lay down and play dead. I do not want my pet to drag me out to the pool and do the death roll. So I urge that we support this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Delighted to hear questions about primates.
He does.
Good representative, in the staff measure summary, could you please explain to this body why we're exempting the black bear?
Good representative, the bear is regulated under the wildlife statutes and not under the exotic animal statutes.
Thank the good representative for that response, professional and quick and concise. Madam Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill has problems. The obvious ones are the bill has, and let me remind you, this bill died last year in this body because it could not work out all the issues. This bill has an emergency clause in Section 9, the last paragraph, states this 2007 Act being necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, and safety, an emergency is declared to exist, and this 2007 Act takes effect on its passage. The above statement, in effect, does not allow for persons who may not own exotic animals or pets to be able to get legal. They will not be able to get a permit from the state of Oregon or a USDA permit after the effective date of this measure. This would have the effect of persons who own exotic animals from being confiscated by the state of Oregon. In most cases, this would be a huge fight, and good and honest citizens of the state of Oregon could suddenly be deemed criminals for protecting their animals. This bill is defective on its face and should not proceed without an amendment addressing this issue. Citizens need at least a year to learn about the new law and legalize before they're subject to confiscating their animals. The bill in its current form exempts persons who now hold a United States Department of Agriculture permit. It does not allow for persons to legalize with the Oregon State Department of Agriculture if the USDA suddenly decides to quit renewing permits. It's also flawed, and it has the effect of placing all of us who are currently legal in the situation of not having any way to get legal in Oregon. Colleagues, this bill was written by the Animal Protection Institute of the Humane Society of the United States. It does not have any connection in any way with local humane societies who I donate to and my wife donates too much money every year. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Boquist, do you wish to close?
Delighted, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, just to make sure we're all on the same sheet of music, and I don't think I need permission for this, we're in the being grossed house version. There is no emergency clause. And in the being house, engrossed house version, if you look at page 2, it drops down to line 21, those who are interested, and it talks about the USDA licensing. Further, if you drop to the bottom of the page, it talks about the permitting process for the Department of Agriculture. And if you go to page 3 on the next page, on the very bottom in section 7, it talks about a 90-day period initially with a one-year extension beyond that for the Department of Agriculture to go back and grandfather anybody that got missed in the first one. There aren't a lot of people with crocodiles in the state of Oregon, so there's not a lot of opposition. However, for those of you who don't believe crocodiles and alligators exist, all you need to do to go to the good representative from Coos Bay, April 9th, 2009, I believe you'll find that the missing pet alligator was in fact found in good shape in Coos Bay after scaring the jabezas out of a whole bunch of people. So, therefore, colleagues, we have the exemptions that we had before, and it was sponsored by local organizations, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes no. House Bill 3437B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3539, relating to unlawful employment practices.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3539. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 3539 comes to you from your Ethics, Election, and Rules Committee. We've actually got a real problem in Oregon and in the United States with religious discrimination in the workplace. We had testimony before our committee that demonstrated that claims involving religious discrimination in the workplace went up a staggering 82% between 1993 and 2003 and have remained high since. In contrast, racial discrimination in the workplace has been fairly flat. Gender discrimination in the workplace has been fairly flat. Age discrimination in the workplace, based on the claims, has actually declined significantly. But religious discrimination in the workplace has gone up significantly. You have some floor letters on your desk that illustrate some of the reasons from the religious group's perspective of why this may be true. House Bill 3539A really is grown out of a process. Former Representative Gordy Anderson and I introduced a couple of religious freedom bills in 2003 and in 2005. This is an outgrowth of that work. This focuses specifically on requiring that employers allow employees to use vacation leave or other leave available to them for the purpose of engaging in their religious observance or practice. It also specifically allows them to wear religious clothing in the workplace, to take time off for a holy day, or to take time off to participate in a religious observance or practice. Now, it does have a test that must be met. The burden is on the employer to demonstrate that there is an undue hardship that exists. If that undue hardship exists, they can restrict the free exercise. And you'll see the hardship that's outlined in the bill there. The level of the undue hardship is the exact same hardship statute we already have in place for accommodating workers with disabilities. That's already in statute. This follows the same standard with one addition. At the request of a good representative from West Salem and the representative from Southern Oregon, who's actually not here today, we added in under section 2, we added in subsection E, allowing an additional safety and health requirement in a facility as a test that an employer could use to demonstrate undue hardship. So we think we very much have a balance here. I think the vote in the committee is demonstrated by that. We have a clear challenge, a clear problem, not only in Oregon but across the United States today. We have the opportunity to stand up and say people should be allowed to freely exercise their religion. People should be allowed to take off a day that they've earned to observe a religious practice, to take off a high holy day or to observe the Sabbath, whether that Sabbath is Sunday, whether that Sabbath is Saturday, whether that Sabbath is Friday. So I urge your support for this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you. Question for the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I'd be happy to.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. There is an exemption in the bill for... Can you tell us why the exemption in the bill for school districts and education service districts are put in this bill?
Excellent question, Madam Speaker, and I should have noted that. Under Section 4, you will see a reference to an existing statute. This section was added at the request of school districts just to make it clear that nothing in this bill impacts that other statute that is already in place, which you see listed out there under Section 4. So it just makes it clear by restating it, it makes it clear that nothing in this bill changes that pre-existing statute related to school district, to clothing for school district employees.
Thank you. So just maybe a clarification.
Clarification? Question. Does the carrier yield?
Be happy to.
He does.
So we are still going to be able to discriminate against teachers from wearing religious garments in school districts?
Madam Speaker, thank you for the question, Representative. I actually personally think that that pre-existing statute has some problems. At this point in session, we were going to try to solve the clear problem of religious observance in the workplace. I'd be very open to looking at that statute, the pre-existing one related to school district employees in the future session, because I think there is a challenge. You've got to balance off between the Establishment Clause that's in the Oregon Constitution and the U.S. Constitution that prohibits the establishment of religion by a school employee, balanced against the Free Exercise Clause, free exercise in the workplace. I'm not sure that statute related to school employees meets that test, but the committee and I decided not to take on that particular battle in this bill.
Another question, if I may.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Be happy to yield.
He does.
On the religious garments, was there any testimony about religions such as people who may claim a religion that would require them or allow them to wear a swastika or have a tattoo of a swastika as being part of a religion that an employer could not discriminate against?
Thank you for the question. No, there was not. The kinds of testimony that we had were things like allowing a Muslim woman to wear modest garb that's required by her faith, requiring an observant Jewish man to wear his yarmulke for the same reason, similar to, you know, allowing a devout Catholic person to have Christmas Day off. Those are the kinds of examples we had. We didn't have any example like the one you just raised.
Thank you. Thank you for answering my questions. And to the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is a very sensitive bill, obviously, because it has to do with the freedom of religion. And it's interesting that we have an exemption in here, and even the good representative probably disagrees with the exemption. He said that we're exempting a big class of employees and allowing them to continue to be discriminated against in this particular area. You know, we hear a lot about the separation of church and state. Well, now the state's telling the employer what to do in this area. And we already have laws And we've talked about this in this caucus about discrimination. We already have laws that prohibit employers from discriminating based on somebody's religious beliefs. And again, as an employer, if somebody were to come to me and reasonably request that they need some time off for a reasonable reason, for a holiday or whatever that might be, I think I would be very considerate of that based on I don't want to discriminate against that person for, you know, I want to treat everybody fairly, but obviously there's a religious discriminatory clause already in most of our applications and in most of our manuals at work. But in today's world, there are a lot of things that are called religion. We all know, I don't need to talk about them, but there's people that would, in the name of religion, do a lot of different things that probably the majority of the people in the United States would not necessarily agree with. A swastika. And if you look at the back of this bill, if you look at, yes, there is a determination here for the purposes of determining whether an accommodation requires significant or difficult or expense, the following factors are going to be considered. By whom? Who's going to consider that? The employer or the employee? The employer and the employee together? If they don't agree, where does it go? It's going to open up the door for some lawsuits, which they already have the avenue to do. And I just look at this bill and I'm wondering why we need this bill. There's already laws that protect people from discrimination based on their religious beliefs. And I think that this might go a little bit too far of putting the burden of proof on the employer to make these exceptions. And I'm just going to probably be a no vote on this bill today.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Kind of following up a little bit more on the previous speaker. Was there discussion in committee relative to religious holidays as it relates to teachers? And was there a distinction between public schools, private schools, and charter schools?
Thank you for the question. There was no discussion in committee related to teachers. The only, except for what I already discussed in terms of Section 4, where the school districts did ask us to explicitly state that, but not beyond that.
Follow-up question, Madam Speaker?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. So I'm just wanting to make sure that I understand something that I understand is correctly. In the school calendar, there is a time set aside, and it's now become known as winter break. And it generally stretches from about December, somewhere between 15th and 20th, to January 2nd, 3rd, 4th, depending on how the calendar falls, and that sort of thing. And all school employees are generally, save for the administrators, are generally given that period, but the teachers and so on are generally given that period of time off. If an employee had a religious holiday that fell outside of that time frame, Could they ask for those additional days off and expect to get them in, or could the employer say the accommodation here is in the school calendar of, say, between December 18th and January 2nd, and therefore the answer is no, you can't have the day off that you're asking for?
Thank you for the question. I think part of the question is answered if you look at lines 6 and 7, where it talks about using vacation leave or other leave available to the employee. They would not get, just because they happen to be a participant in a religion that happens to observe a different high holy day than the majority of the school employees, that doesn't entitle them to additional leave time. If they had leave time to which they were entitled, they could certainly request it off, and you can see in page 2 in section, the latter half of section 2, where it talks about the undue hardship clause. If the school district in this case was able to meet the undue hardship test, you can see there, demonstrate that it was a burden on them in terms of costs, financial resources, number of persons employed, safety and health, overall financial resources of the employer, et cetera, then they would be able to say no to that request. If they couldn't meet the undue hardship test and the employee had leave available to them, they would have to grant it.
Okay. Another question, Madam?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Not to be flippant, but if an employee determined that they worshiped the sun god and they did so without clothing, would there be a requirement in this bill for the employer to accommodate them to be able to work without clothing?
Actually, there's very broad and specific case law in the state and federally that relates to requiring that religions be bona fide religions. So, for instance, saying you're a Nazi, for instance, is not a bona fide religion. There are specific tests that you have to have specific religious tenets to your religion, and there's quite a bit of case law around that. The basic change here is not so much in whether someone's religious practice, their religious faith, is gauged to be real or not. This bill will not change that. The difference here is, it may an employer restrict the religious free exercise using just what's considered a de minimis standard right now, or is there an undue hardship standard that they have to meet a much more specific test, as I said earlier, that would be parallel to accommodating an employee with a disability.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Hunt, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would just again remind us, and I was actually frankly surprised to hear the testimony that we heard in the Rules Committee that talked about these claims of discrimination in the workplace. Because I would have guessed that claims of racial discrimination, gender discrimination, age discrimination would be up in the workplace. But in fact, the testimony we received is that racial and gender discrimination are roughly flat and that age discrimination is actually down, at the same time that religious discrimination in the workplace is up 82%. We've clearly got a challenge. I think the least we can do is to say to people of faith, you have the same standard as a person with a disability in terms of your ability to operate in the workplace. I urge your support of this bill.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Wisnant, how do you vote? votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Merkley, how do you vote? Excuse for business of the House. House Bill 3539A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
SJR 15, declaring legislative support of Columbia River Crossing Project.
The question now arises upon third reading and final adoption of Senate Joint Resolution 15. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. SJR 15 declares legislative support for continued bi-state and bipartisan efforts in planning, coordinating, and funding the Columbia River Crossing Project. The resolution recognizes the importance of addressing the needs of transportation, business centers, and affected neighborhoods. Further, SJR 15 calls for Oregon and Washington's congressional delegations to work on obtaining federal funding for the project. Oregon and Washington began meeting in the 1990s to discuss the growing traffic flow problem across the Columbia River bridges. Today, record traffic of 125,000 vehicles per weekday is expected. Today, recorded traffic of 125,000 vehicles per day is expected to reach 180,000 vehicles a day by 2020. Governors Kitzhaber and Locke appointed a bi-state task force in 2001. The Columbia River Crossing Project's goal is to solve the congestion, mobility, and safety problems on a five-mile segment of Interstate 5 between Columbia Boulevard in Portland and State Route 500 in Vancouver. An environmental impact process is underway, and several alternatives, including a no-build option, are currently under consideration and will be taken through final analysis. SJR 15 continues the good communication and planning efforts to improve the I-5 Columbia River crossing. The resolution comes to you with a unanimous recommendation from the Transportation Committee, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I will be brief, but I just wanted to urge your support and let you know how important this resolution is to my district. The I-5 bridge is squarely located in House District 44 in North Portland. And I would just reiterate line 17 and 18 of the resolution that talks about congestion on the Columbia River crossing is projected to grow to 13 hours a day by 2020. 13 hours a day of congestion. Our economy is already being strangled by the congestion on the I-5 bridge as the major north-south link. And I would encourage us, as this resolution says, that in future discussions to have strong partnerships on making this project happen, which will be the major transportation project in Oregon for many years to come. And I hope that we step up like our partners in Washington State are in terms of providing planning dollars and other dollars to make this project happen in as quick a fashion as possible. I urge your aye vote on this resolution. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Beyer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hunt, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Scott, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Joint Resolution 15, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 179 relating to insurance company income appointment and prescribing effective date. Senate Bill 328 relating to juveniles with mental disease or defect. Senate Bill 624 relating to Oregon Advocacy Commission's office.
Bills read the first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral.
Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 163 relating to disclosure of protected health information, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 183 relating to a reinsurance program for medical professional liability insurance policy provided by State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 345 relating to execution sales. Senate Bill 416 related to historic property and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 431 related to involuntary towing of motor vehicles. Senate Bill 484 relating to unlawful trade practices. Senate Bill 688 relating to subject workers for a purpose of workers' compensation status. Senate Bill 815 relating to taxation and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 1042 relating to citing of concedo and declaring an emergency.
Bill is read the second time or passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the first bill.
Senate Bill 331 relating to organized retail theft.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 331A. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's been a long time since we've talked much about the methamphetamine epidemic here in our chamber. Last session, we did a number of bills to curb the production of meth. And as we well know, that meth is an incredible addiction that is almost impossible to stop, and it is impossible to stop without treatment. Because of this, we have a bill that came to us in the Judiciary Committee. It is Senate Bill 331, and it came out unanimously that creates the offense of an organized retail crime. And this is about people that organize going from business to business and stealing the product, whatever it is. We heard about metal theft earlier in the session, and this is basically about stealing groceries to feed their habit. This is about gangs that are organized and they have made the industry of the groceries at a loss of $30 billion annually to our grocery stores. One large regional grocery store chain credits a $130 million loss in Oregon annually and $10 million in the state of Oregon alone. These figures do not account for the annual losses of non-grocery retailers. These types of crimes are impacting the price of goods for all retailers and us as consumers. It is important to understand that this is not a petty shoplifting issue. This is organization. Retailers understand that petty shoplifting is just the cost of doing business. The organized retail crime gangs are very separate from this. They move across the state lines to steal large amounts of merchandise that can be easily sold through fencing operations, flea markets, pawn shops, swap meets, and electronic auction websites, or any other shady organization or operation selling goods. Currently, this type of crime is still a misdemeanor, meaning there is little deterrent for these organized retail crimes. And this puts grocery employees and customers at great risk because these criminal gangs are becoming more brazen and violent when stealing merchandise from retail establishments. I'm asking for your support of this bill. It comes from the Senate, and it will give law enforcement the tools they need to discourage these organizations from expanding within the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Kump, do you wish to close?
No, thank you. This is a good vote against meth addicts in our state.
Representative Boone, did you wish to be recognized on this bill? I did not see you in the queue. Representative Boone.
I actually thought I had pressed the button. Maybe I didn't, but if it's not appropriate, that's okay.
The chair requests unanimous consent that we allow Representative Boone to speak on this bill. Is there objection? Seeing none, please go ahead. Representative Boone.
Well, I cut this five-page thing down to two, so. It's not that late. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'm just getting my second wind. And I can say that I second a lot of what Representative from Woodburn stated. Just wanted to point out a couple of the things. These gangs are highly specialized. Each person in the crew has a particular area of expertise, whether it's distracting employees, doing the actual shoplifting, driving the getaway vehicle, and they can earn up to $3,000 a week. And this is from Security Info Watch earlier last year. This investigation found that typically once the band of thieves had stolen the merchandise, they would often offload their stolen goods to the high-level fencing operation the next day or that day. The Washington Post reports that criminals have discovered large profits made relatively easy and without much risk by stealing merchandise from the crowded understaffed stores. And they said that most stolen items tend to be high-priced, widely used products that are routinely sold in chain stores like over-the-counter medicines, razors, film, CDs or DVDs, baby formula, diapers, batteries, hair growth and smoking cessation products, hardware, tools, designer clothes, and electronics. Shoplifters might spend all day going from store to store and then sell the goods they've stolen to the fence for about 10 to 20% of the retail value. As a state legislature, we have a role as well to play. By increasing penalties for this type of activity, we too are acknowledging this problem, and our action today will serve to educate local law enforcement that shoplifting is often more significant than a six-year-old with sticky fingers and a pack of gum. This bill is just one more tool in the meth trafficking fight throughout Oregon, and I urge your aye vote. I apologize for flipping all over here. I'm getting a little tired.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, Madam Speaker.
She does.
Is there a fiscal on this bill?
Just one moment, sir. We're checking. Representative from Portland, the fiscal impact on this bill was indeterminate.
Follow-up question?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
Yes,
she does.
Was there any estimate of the downstream effect of the fiscal on this and the future corrections budget?
Okay. Representative, the response is that this is already a crime. This bill is just to help be able to prosecute it. So there would not be that actualization at this time. I'll put it right there.
An additional question?
Yes.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Absolutely.
She does.
Does this not increase the penalties for certain offenses?
Representative, that my response is a yes and a no, because we can already prosecute under the RICO Act, and yet that is a very difficult way to move forward in this type of a theft bill. And so this bill makes it an in-between step so that it can be prosecuted. Oh, RICO is an A felony. This is a B felony. A misdemeanor is a felony.
Madam Speaker, can I ask for a clarification on that?
Clarification?
I don't understand what you just said. Could you try that one more time for me?
I would say it so that I would understand it completely. This makes it possible rather to take the people that are doing this crime and say this is a statute that is now under the law that is a be felony. We don't have to have the whole statute of requirements to do the RICO Act.
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't get those questions to you in advance.
Oh, that is fine, Representative.
To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
I just had a chance to look at this bill for the first time, but and I understand why we want to fight organized gangs that shoplift huge amounts of money, and it makes a lot of sense for us to have the tools to deal with them. But this is a pretty wide bill. I mean, it says that any two people, a husband and wife, say, acting together on a shoplifting team that shoplifts more than $5,000 over 90 days turns into a RICO offense. And that seems to me to be sort of overkill for a situation where there is, as the carrier points out, enough tools right now to try these people for a B felony. The notion of creating a RICO offense that can be created so easily based on a prosecutor's judgment seems to me to be a bit premature and a bit of overkill, and I'll be a no on this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Kant, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just an additional clarification. First of all, the Criminal Justice System Council Commission, thank you, really they shared that it is a minimal fiscal because of the fact that these people are already in the system. They've already been part of what they've been working on. To clarify further, this does not make this a RICO offense. RICO is a Class A felony. This is a Class B felony. With that, the only thing that I would share, colleagues, is please just consider how many people are impacted by this bill. All of our local retail people are impacted greatly by it. And we had to take a big, giant step last time and say, you have to get a prescription for pseudoephedrine. This is a giant step in saying, no, we're not going to allow these types of theft gangs, organized theft gangs, to be part of our state of Oregon. We have to draw a line. Thank you, and I ask for your support.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. Senate Bill 331A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on tomorrow, the Friday, June 8th, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Announcement from Speaker of the House, effective immediately. I am appointing the following members to a conference committee on House Bill 2723. Representative Jackie Dingfelder, Chair. Representative Bill Garrard. Representative Mitch Greenlick. Memorandum from Ramona Kennedy, Chief Clerk. Memorandum from the Speaker of the House, effective immediately in accordance with ORS 285A.143, I am appointing the following representatives to the Fujian Sister State Committee: Representative Jeff Merkley, co-chair; Representative Dennis Richardson; Representative Arnie Roblin. Further announcements? Remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 9:30 a.m. Friday, January 8th, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House adjourn until Friday, 9:30 a.m., June 8th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. Friday, June 8th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.